3 years ago, lovely Rose Bampton made musical history when she achieved a highly auspicious Metropolitan Opera debut at the age of 23, becoming the youngest star on the roster of America's most distinguished opera association. Concertours added to the luster of Miss Bampton's growing fame, and musical critics all over the country hastened to praise her imaginative and dramatic interpretation, the flexibility and color of her rich contralto voice. Then, one night only a few weeks ago, singing in one of the famous Hollywood Bowl concerts, Rose Bampton created a musical sensation. The aria, Una Voce Poco Fa, from Rossini's opera, The Barber of Seville, is recognized as a showpiece for coloratura sopranos. But contralto Rose Bampton sang it so beautifully that the enthusiastic applause of the huge audience interrupted the concert for many minutes. We have asked Miss Bampton to repeat her distinguished performance this afternoon. Miss Rose Bampton singing first, Una Voce Poco Fa.
Ma se mi tocco, dove ho già
Bampton chooses as her second selection one of the sketches of Paris by Kathleen Lockhart Manning, The Reverie in the Luxembourg Garden. The longest lived musical hit on Broadway contains the name of another Englishman who is adding to his laurels in the United States. At a quiet moment in At Home Abroad, a young man named Reginald Gardiner steps modestly before the front curtain and without any warning plunges right into the smartest and most deftly amusing monologue of this theatrical season. Playgoing Londoners have for several years recognized Mr. Gardiner as one of England's most talented and popular young actors. But At Home Abroad is his first New York show, and this afternoon marks only his second American radio appearance. The magic key of RCA turns to Reginald Gardiner, whose subject for this afternoon is Train.
Gentlemen, when any one of you has been ill and you're lying in bed recovering from the night before, you look around your bedroom and you'll notice all kinds of objects that you've lived with all your life, but just because you're ill, they all assume terrifying and jeering shapes. For instance, you've probably got a flowered border around the top of your wallpaper which goes like this. All round the wall. Well, after you've gazed at that for about an hour, you suddenly find one bit that goes, ahee-hoo, slightly different. It's maddening if you gaze at that. And you find your furniture does exactly the same thing. You've got armchairs that assume frightful faces and leer at you all the time, which merely goes to prove that all these inanimate objects are actually alive. Now, the most alive thing I've ever seen is a railway engine. Not only is it alive, but it is livid, furious. It loathes humanity. And in direct contrast, of course, we have a ship. Well, a ship is a sweet, sad, graceful creature. I mean, anybody who's seen a liner go away on a long voyage cannot deny that it has that sort of look about it. You know what I mean? As opposed to that look of an engine, which is so horrid. And an engine is the most livid thing in the world, and the only man who isn't afraid of it, I can't think why, is the engineer, who leans out of his cab and waits for the signal to go. And when he gets the signal, he turns round, catches hold of a lever, and pulls it down, and this livid beast is unleashed. Like this. So forth on its journey. Well, now that we've unleashed this livid thing, we find that it's still equally furious, and it has a colossal argument with the rails it's running on. Like this, biddle-a-dog, giddle-a-dog, biddle-a-dee, giddle-a-dog, buddle-a-dog, biddle-a-dee, biddle-a-dog, giddle-a-dog, biddle-a-dee, giddle-a-dog, buddle-a-dog, biddle-a-dee, and that goes on the entire journey. And not only does it have a colossal argument with the rails it's running on, but also all the other rails when they dare to cross its own. Like this, biddle-a-dog, giddle-a-dog, biddle-a-dee, giddle-a-dee, so on. You needn't really get very concerned about me. The whole of my family died in a lunatic asylum, so all right. Now, I'm not a much-traveled man, but I'm told this goes on all over the world in all the different railways. For instance, in France, exactly the same thing takes place, and the language is different to all and all. Song and all, building it, all and all, so it's all very much the same thing. And speaking of France, the first time I ever went there, I arrived at Calais, and as soon as I got off the boat, I got my first glimpse of a French engine. Well, I was very much impressed, because it seemed to me to be four times as big and eight times as livid as any engine I'd ever seen before. To begin with, it had 18 of everything. Many more things than your American engines. I mean, cow catchers, bells, tea cozies, knives and forks. Everything but the kitchen sink hanging all over it. And while I was crossing the rails to get to the platform on the other side where I was to catch my train, I had to walk in front of this frightful-looking beast. And I cowered away from it, and suddenly, to my amazement, it let out an extraordinarily effeminate voice. It seemed to me to be so enormously masculine, and yet as it started on its journey for Paris, all it managed to summon up was... Well, of course, I may be wrong about that, but... It really does seem to me to be a little peculiar. Well, now, there's one thing I must know before I die, and that's something that takes place in tunnels which are dotted about the English countryside. You dash into one of these tunnels, the brakes go on, and if you look out of the window, you'll notice all down the tunnel at intervals are a lot of flare lights. And in between these lights are men standing. They're leaning on shovels and pickaxes and golf clubs and billiard cues and anything they can get hold of. And they live there. Definitely. And as you go slowly through the tunnel, an extraordinary noise starts at the far end and slowly crashes past the window. I've no idea what it is. But it goes like this. Bong, 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 bong. Bong, dong, dong, dong. I don't know what it is. I think it's a piece of tin that's been nailed to the side of the tunnel with some number or something written on it, which really doesn't seem to mean anything to anybody. And it sticks out, and it's too big. And it strikes the side of the train as it goes through the tunnel. And presumably the men are merely there to bend the tin back, ready for the next train to hit it when it comes through the tunnel. Well, now, just before I end this bit of nonsense, I would like to tell you the one thing that an engine loathes more than anything else, and that is another engine coming in the opposite direction. That it cannot bear. And by this time, you've probably settled down quite calmly, having got used to diddle-a-dom, buddle-a-dirk, diddle-a-deep, and all the other maddening noises, when suddenly, to your horror, this new thing bursts upon you and nearly knocks you on the carriage floor. It's the most frightening thing in the world, and it goes like this. Very silly, that's all. Don't bother about it.
In a prison camp near Constantinople in the year 1922, 36 ex-officers of the Russian Imperial Army organized a male chorus calling themselves the Don Cossack. Under the dynamic leadership of Sergei Zharov, their musical wanderings have taken them all over the world. And 2 weeks ago, in the presence of the former Grand Duchess Marie of Russia and many eminent musical authorities, they celebrated their 3,000th concert. This afternoon, we are happy to welcome the valiant group of émigrés who have done so much to acquaint the world with the beauty of Russian choral singing. The magic key of RCA turns to the Don Cossacks, who first sing a religious number by Bortnianski, "Who Can Equal Thee?" As an encore selection, the Don Cossacks bring us their famous and highly individual interpretation of one of the most famous traditional Russian airs, the Song of the Volga Boatmen.